It's the moment of high drama has begun. The brothers had been on their way for the second time back home. They are stopped. They're searched. And in the baggage of Binyamin, the cup of Tzafnat Paaneach is found. And this terrible crisis. They're all under threat now of being held forever captive by this cruel, tyrannical Tzafnat Paaneach, who says that, no, you're all staying here. And finally he says, well, all right, the boy, the one who stole it, Binyamin, he will remain here and you may go home. So here it comes, the longest soliloquy, the longest speech in Sefer Bereshit, about 17 psukim, and it is a speech that is structured so beautifully. There's such power and there's eloquence, and there are all sorts of messages that are sent from Yehuda to the one whom he does not know to be Yosef. All sorts of messages that he sends to him that are understood by intelligent people between the lines. There's not only pleading and begging, there are serious threats. The speech of Yehuda is divided into three parts, so says Nechama Leibowitz. The first and the longest part is the story of what took place in the past. A review of the relationship between Tzafnat Paaneach and the children of Yaakov. Then there are going to be a few psukim that are going to describe the situation at the present moment. The last two psukim are going to be Yehuda's proposal for the future. Let's move through it. Let's move through it. Vayigashel of Yehuda, you have the English on the other side. Yehuda approached him and he said, "Be Adonai, please, my master, my lord, Yadavin Avdech Odova Biosne Adoni, let your servant please speak something into the ear of my master." And Rashi, we have the Rashi down there. I will be referring to the Rashi from time to time. Baznecho, let my words go into your ears. And don't be angry with your servant. I mean, he's very servile. That he says, you know, there may be things that I say that are going to hurt you, or may seem ill in your eyes. Don't be angry, because you are like Paro. Now, Rashi, of course, tells us on this Kamocha Kaparo that on its simple, most basic level, I hold you in as high regard as our whole Paro. And then Rashi tells us that there are other messages that the Medrash tells us, that Yehuda is telling him, you know, there was a Paro who took the Bubbe Surah, you understand, to his palace, and oh, did he and the entire palace suffer. Freidnisht, you know what's waiting for you. God is going to come down here and cause you suffering. And then he says, you're like Paro? Just like Paro promises and does not keep his promises, he makes all sorts of commitments and doesn't keep them. So are you. We know you're kind already. And then there seems to be another thing. You're like Paro. I mean, you asked us to bring this boy down so that you should look at him, you know. You want to meet him. Is this what you call meeting him and slaving him for the rest of his life? So Rashi and the Medrash see on its simple level, yes, you're like Paro. Oy, Ochen Vey, are you like Paro? Adoni, now he begins to describe what happened in the past. This goes back to the first time that they had been in Egypt. Adoni Shalat Abadav, my master, asked his servants Lamor, saying, Hayesh lechem av oach, do you have a father or a brother? Do you have a father or a brother? By the way, there's also an implied serious question over here. Did you ask this kind of question to everybody who came to Mitzrayim? Is it millions of people who have come during these years of famine in order to buy grain? Did you ask everybody? Do you have a father or a brother? We have a sneaky suspicion you asked only us. And we were forthcoming. We said to my master, Yesh Lanu Av Zaken, we have an old father, V'yeled Zekunim Katan, and a Klenchik Beitchikol. I always wonder why he calls him a Klenchik Beitchikol. Binyamin at the time is a father of 10 children. A father of 10 children. So I imagine to a Tata who's already about 130, so Binyamin with his 10 children is a Beitchikol. The fact is that by a father and a mother, they can be already grandparents, and it's still my little Beitchikol and my little Nadala. All right, yeah. V'yeled Zekunim Katan V'achiv Meit. His brother had died here. There's a little lie over here. His brother died. His brother didn't die. They don't know that he died. But Yehuda is not taking any chances because he's afraid if he's going to be sort of ambiguous about his brother, this fellow is going to say, bring that brother here. And then what are they going to do? He remained alone to his mother and his father who love him. By the way, there is no... I don't know why he mentions a mother. I mean, I may ask some questions that I don't have great answers for, but just hang in there with me. You said to your servants, Horidu Eli, bring him down to me, Vasima Eniel, I'll take a look at him, I want to see him. And here is the implied, like this is what you call seeing him. We said to my master, Lo Yuchalan Na Lazov Et Aviv. The boy cannot leave his father. Vazav Et Aviv Amet. He leaves his father, the father can die. And he's not saying it, but it's really understood. I told you that the father may be heartbroken completely if this boy has to leave. Now, we would expect at least a modicum of compassion. There was absolutely no compassion whatsoever. You didn't really listen to a word we said. Vatomer, your response, Vatomer Avodecho, your response to your servants was, Im lo yeded achichem hakotonitchem, if your little brother doesn't come down with you, lo tosifen lirot panai, don't see my face ever again. The response was not a response that had any kind of feeling or compassion. Nothing, no! Brutal, cruel, dictatorial, tyrannical. And it came to pass when we went back up to Father, your servant, my father, and we told him as Divrei Adoni, the words of our master, by Yom Ravinu, and then afterwards, our father said, "Shuvu shivru lanu matochel, go down and buy for us a little bit of food." Vanoma, and we said, "Lo nuchal adedet, we can't go down. We can't go down to Mitzrayim. Im yesh achinu akatoni tonu, if our little brother is with us, we'll go down. Ki lo nuchal lirot pnei hoish, we cannot see the face of this man. Vachinu akatoni, and we tonu, if our little brother is not with him." Vayomer avdechol v'yelenu. Your servant, my father, said to us, Atem yadatem, you know, kishnayim yoldo liyishti, that my wife gave birth to two. By the way, Yaakov never said this. He never said it. He would not have said in the presence of the ten that my wife gave birth to two, leaving, of course, the impression that the mothers of the other ten tribes who are there were not his wife. He would never have said that. But the Yehuda is building up a dramatic and a passionate appeal to this cruel-hearted dictator, Safna Paneach. You know that my wife gave birth to two Hagetzi HaEchad Miiti, and one of them left me for Omar, and I said, ach, tarof, taraf. He's been torn apart. By the way, I haven't seen any Mefarshim who mentioned this, but he would most probably be the first moment at which Yosef gets some kind of an indication what father thought about him, what happened, or what is it that they may have done to explain what happened to Yosef. He has had no indication now in 22 years what it was that happened at home. I've always said the reason why he didn't send a letter home, because he didn't know what was going on at home. A letter from him home may have caused such turmoil and such upheaval in the family that the rift between him and his brothers would never have been healed. But that's not for this year. Let's go. All right? V'lodi Yisuf Adhenan, I haven't seen him till now. You're going to take this from for me too. The Korohu also, and if a tragedy befalls him, you will take my own old age in great pain down into the grave. That's the past. Part one of Yehuda's presentation. Vato, okay? Now we have to talk about the situation as it is right now. Now you have to imagine, it's Yehuda speaking to Yosef, but there are a lot of people standing over there. There are all sorts of servants and ministers and his brothers. This is an extremely dramatic, there's an electricity in the air. There's great tension. Vato now, Kivori alav dechovi, if I come now to your servant, my father, Barnard, and Enu Tonu, and the boy isn't with us. An unusual pasuk right now. You have to notice how unusual this pasuk is. Every pasuk usually ends. I know that sounds like a very brilliant statement. The brilliance of the statement, this pasuk doesn't end. It's not going to end until the next pasuk. I don't think there's another one like it. Certainly not in Bereshis. Take a look what he says. Now when we come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us. Right, so now the pasuk has to tell us, well, what's going to happen? Pasuk doesn't say what's going to happen. And nafsho kshura v'nafsho, their souls are bound up with one another. No, so we're still waiting for you. Was it Zan? And the pasuk doesn't tell us. We have to go into the next pasuk. This is a strange, unique kind of structure. V'hoya. You know, it's like you want to say something bad and you can't get it out. You sort of, the tragic, difficult statement, you just let it, you know, until the moment when you have to say it. He wants to say it, that the father's going to die if the boy isn't there. Can't shverfa kin to say this. So therefore he says, and his soul is bound up with his soul. V'hoya, and now he's really repeating. He's stalling for time. He's repeating it, and it says, V'hoya will come to pass, kiroto, when he will see kiein hanar, that the boy isn't there. Now he has to say it, v'meit, he will die. V'horidu avodecho et sevet avodecho avinu b'yogon sheola, and your servants are going to take the old age in such unhappiness down into the grave. Now he says, if you're wondering through this whole speech, why am I the one that's representing my brothers? So I want to tell you, I'm representing him because I am the one who has taken responsibility for him. Ki avdecho orav etanar. Your servant was the one who guaranteed the safety of the boy. Me'im avi, from my father, saying the following. I guaranteed. Im lo avi enu elecha, if I don't bring him to you, v'chatosi lo avi kol ayomim, I will have sinned to my father all of his days. Now comes what's really necessary. So what is your suggestion, Yehuda? What is it that you suggest now? So he says, Viator now, Yeshiv na'avdecha tachat hamar, let your servant stay in place of the boy. Eved la'adoni, as a servant to my master, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm smarter. V'hanar yal alechav, and the boy will, yal im echav, the brother will go, the boy will go up with his brothers. This is really, he's really come to the end, and then he ends it with a profound emotional plea. Ki eich ele el avi, how can I go up to my father? V'hanar einenu iti, and the boy isn't with me. Pen ere bero, lest I see the evil, asher yimtzo et avi, that will find my father. What a great speech. What a great speech. Does it have impact? Does it have the desired results? Well, I'm telling you, you can say yeah, and you can say no. Let's take a look if it has the desired result. V'lo yochol Yosef lehit apek. Now Joseph could not restrain himself. L'chol hanitzavim alav, in the presence of all those who stood before him, by Yikra, so he called out, Hotziu kol ish mi'alai, remove every man from before me. V'lo amad ishito, and no man stood with him, b'it vaday Yosef elachov, when Yosef made his identity known to his brothers. This is most probably one of the most dramatic moments in all of literature. All of literature. Most dramatic moment. I have a number of things troubling me. Of course, the question that many of the Mefarshim ask is, why did it take so long? Why didn't Joseph reveal himself the last time they were there, when he had accused them of being spies? And he incarcerates them. And he listens in and he hears his brother saying, Avol Hashem im anachnu, we are guilty, Alochinu b'sareinu, our brother, our flesh and blood. Ashelo shamanu, b'kananu eleinu, we didn't listen to him when he pleaded with us. Al Cain boy, Leinu Atzorazos, that's why this terrible tzorah has befallen us. He hears his brothers saying how they regret what they did. They didn't listen to the pleas of their brother. And then Reuven is the one who says, Vayan Reuven answers and he says, Halo Amar Tirachem, remember I told you so, I don't told you, Al Techetu Bayeled, don't sin with this child, and you didn't listen to me. Did he want to know whether they regret it? He knows that they regretted it. Why doesn't he reveal himself then? And what happens is he turns off and goes into another room and he cries and he washes his face and he comes out again and he has steeled himself for the continuation of this confrontation. Now why does he do it? So this we talked about some years ago. There's a test. He tests them. He takes Shimon from them. And he incarcerates, he jails Shimon. He's giving them an opportunity to say, oh no, no, we're not leaving any Jew in your hands. You don't release him immediately. We're going to tear Mitzrayim to pieces. But they don't do it. They don't stand up for Shimon. So he knows that he has to start all over again from the beginning. They come back with Binyamin. He frames Binyamin. And now, of course, they are being tested again. Binyamin is going to be in jail for the rest of his life. What are they going to do? Now, isn't this great? Yehuda is the one who now says, oh, no, 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 no. Never again. Never again. I'm not going to leave a Yiddish kint over here. Out of the question. It simply won't be. I'll stay in his place. Oh, this is really tshuva. This is really doing tshuva. Does Yosef want to reveal himself now? That's my question. You're going to look at me and wonder what kind of a question this is. What a It says, "V'lo yochol Yosef litapek." Yosef couldn't control himself, and he calls everybody out. Everybody out of here. Let's hear that again. What did Yosef say? What does the pasuk say? He couldn't control himself. I want you to take a look in number two. There's a Shemi Shmuel. The Nida, the Hineksiv, it says, "V'lo yochol Yosef litapek." Yosef could not control himself. Mashma, you know what that seems to indicate? What happens if he would have been able to control himself? He wouldn't have revealed himself now. Mashma, shim hoya yochol litapek, if he could have controlled himself, if he would have been strong enough, hayam litapek od. Now he says, ad sheyel chukol anitzavim alav. If he could have controlled himself, he would simply have waited until everybody left, instead of having to become so dramatic about it and saying, everybody out of my presence, clear the room. He would have waited. Umuchach, that means, shehaita to'elet mima shemamtin litgalot aleihem. It seems that there's some benefit in his waiting to reveal himself to them. I ask a stronger question than the Shemi Shmuel. And I read, "V'lo yochol Yosef litapek." Yosef was not able to control himself. He didn't want to reveal himself even now. So then the big question becomes, if this is the position that I'm taking, what more does this man, Tzafnat Paneach, want? What more does he want? Yehuda is ready to stay in Binyamin's place. What an act of great self-sacrifice. All for the Alta Tata over there. The Alta Tata that's going to die if he doesn't see Binyamin again. Oh, this is a powerful, powerful speech Yehuda has. I mean, and watch, you're going to see. Let's take a little peek in the Ramban. Number three, the Ramban first brings the... by the way, the Shemi Shmuel at the end says, why is he doing this to his father? Every minute that he doesn't reveal himself, his father is still sitting there 22 years. 22 years he's sitting there with no knowledge of his son. What more reason is there? Whatever reason Yosef may have had in all of these years not to notify his father. But now, take a look. The brothers of Dan Tshuva, they're ready to take Binyamin's place. These are serious questions. Well, it's too tense now. So the Ramban says, "V'lo yochol," number three, "V'lo yochol Yosef litapek l'chol anisom alav." Yosef could not control himself in the presence of all those who were standing before him. So Rashi has one pshat, the Ramban is going to have a different pshat. The Ramban begins by quoting the Rashi, "Lo yochol lizbol." Yosef could not tolerate sheyu amitzchim nitzavim alav, that Egyptians should be standing there, v'shomin, and they hear she'echov midbayshin, that his brothers are being embarrassed, behivad olahem, when he reveals himself. It's more. What is he going to say? Back in the pasuk, what does he say? Vayitin et kolo bivechi. His voice burst out in crying. Vayishmu Mitzchayim. Mitzchayim heard. I'm reading pasuk 2. Vayishma beit paro. Vayom Yosef elechov ani Yosef. I am Yosef. Ha'od avichai. Is my father yet alive? And his brothers could not answer him because they trembled from before him. This was a revelation of such power. This brutal, cruel man is their brother Yosef, who has all the reason in the world to even be more brutal and cruel to them. And he's going to tell them, "No, don't worry. You're not the ones who sold me here. God sent me here before you." I think Rashi is saying that he didn't want his brothers to be embarrassed in the presence of the Egyptians. He didn't want the Egyptians to hear when he tells them, no, you didn't sell me here. God sold me here. You know, it may be a lesson for our time. Or do people have to be careful about what they say about fellow Jews in the presence of the world? Oy, Nebuchadnezzar, are there people who walk around the world and say all sorts of things to Goyim about Jews that we suffer from day in, day out. The tragedy of our time is not that Goyim hate us. The tragedy of our time is the suffering that's caused to us by fellow Jews. If a sukkah is built in Shiloh, you understand, the whole world is going to know Jews are building in the occupied territories. Chmoninitzlan. Yosef, oh no. There are things that stay within the family. Nobody has to know about this. So according to Rashi, lo yochel Yosef litapek, the word litapek, he learns means to be so veiled, to tolerate. He can't tolerate the idea of saying this in the presence of the Egyptians. If you go to where it's underlined, there we have the Ramban's approach. V'hanachon v'einai, the Ramban says, what seems to be correct in my eyes, shehoyu shami beis paro. I mean, this is present there were people from the house of Paro who had been so deeply moved by the words of Yehuda, they were urging Yosef, Tzafnas, let them go. Let the boy go. Look at what the Ramban says. V'anochem v'einai in my eyes, what seems to be correct in my eyes, shehoyu shami beis paro. There were people there from the house of Paro, umen ha-mitzchim, anoshim rabim. There were many people there. Yechalu panov, who were begging him, limchol binyamin, to forgive binyamin, ki nichmeru rachameihem al tachnuna Yehuda, because they had become so deeply moved by the pleas of Yehuda. V'lo yochol Yosef lehitchazek l'kulam. Yosef couldn't stand up against the pleas of all those around him. Do you know what the Ramban is saying? Making my question even greater. If he could have, he would have. He would not have listened to anybody, and he would have continued the charade. Why?
What did Ramban think better?
Wait a minute. Vayikro la'avodav. Hotziu kolish nachri me'alai ki adaber imahem. Vayetsu me'alav. They all went out to but say to me, you love not on at kolag bevechi. Because he says lehitapek means that he couldn't take the pressures that were being brought upon him. Don't you understand? Even great leaders, you know, there are pressures on Bush. There are pressures on Olmert. Everybody is pressure on Olmert. Understand? Everybody has pressures. And here it is, everybody around him is pressuring him. He can't withstand. So I'm asking, what was he waiting for? Rebbeinu da'alma kula, what was he waiting for? All right. My pshat is the following. There is something that has been eating away at Yosef from the first moment that his brothers presented themselves before him. And for the life of him, it is causing him such pain. It's causing him such pain. He doesn't know what to do. And he just wants to wait. In a word, when they arrive for the first time in the house of Yosef, it says, Vayaker Yosef et Echov, Yosef recognized his brothers, Vehem Lohi Kiruhu, and they didn't recognize him. They don't recognize me? I know what you're going to tell me. Everybody knows the Rashi. When he left, so he didn't have a beard yet, and they had beards. So he can recognize them because this sort of 22 years later looked the same. Maybe a few streaks of gray here and there, yeah. But he went, you know, with a little baby face, and then it's 22 years later. I have difficulty with that. Because there's a Rashi at the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev, long, big Rashi, that says, whatever happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. Beginning of Parshat Vayeshev, it says, Eli told us Yaakov, these are the stories of Yaakov. Yosef ben Shvayesrei Shana. Yosef was 17 years old. Is the whole history of Yaakov Yosef? So Rashi brings to the Medrash, Yaakov's brother hated him. Yosef's brothers hated him. Yaakov had to flee. Yosef was sold into slavery. And then it says, and Rashi brings it twice, not once, twice. They looked alike. Ben Zakunim, his... So Rashi says, Ben Zakunim there at the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev, Shoyoziv the Ikunin shel Yosef, Doma Yaakov, the face of Yosef was the face of Yaakov. You understand? Shtei tipot mayim, as they would say. So what are you telling me? They couldn't recognize him because he left without a beard. Did they recognize their father with a beard? If they were able to recognize their father with a beard, they should be able to see that this is Yosef. Take a look at it. Uncanny. This fella, Tzofnas Paneach. He could be a double for Faba. And they don't recognize him. They don't recognize him. More than that, just take a look. I tried to make a full list. I'm most probably going to miss some of them. How many hints does he drop all along? He starts asking them about the family. Well, you know, didn't Yehuda say over here, did you ask everybody about the family? They assume he didn't ask. What? Tzofnat Paneach is the one who's going to... Millions of people are coming and he's going to have them come to his house and he's going to ask them, tell me, was it the tata, was it the mama? Do you have any other siblings at home? I mean, you didn't do... Why didn't that hit Yehuda that something's going on over here? And then when he demands that the little brother should be brought to him, and then they find their money back in their... Why shouldn't they start thinking, what's going on over here? I'll tell you what, something else that I wonder. I can't for the life of me believe that it wasn't known in the streets of Mitzrayim that this Tzofnat Paneach is a fellow that they pulled out of prison. And from prison he became the second in command and the one who was selling grain to all of Mitzrayim. They didn't get the story about him. They couldn't have asked somebody, who is this guy Tzofnas Paneach anyway? Especially now that they are suffering at his hands. Know thine enemy. They might have found out that this fellow was some Hebrew kid. Some Hebrew kid. And something to do with dreams. They come back the second time. He invites them for dinner. They come in for dinner, and there are place cards over there. And do you know how they're seated? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Binyamin. Chronologically, according to their birthdays. And the pasuk says that they looked at each other and they... Chevra, who could have known this in the whole world? They don't get it. They don't get it. He pulls the whole shtick with Binyamin. He's hitting them on the head time and time again. And they don't get it. Do you know what Yosef wants more than anything else in the world? Something that he said when this whole drama began to unfold at the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev. His father sends him to Shechem to see how are his brothers and how are the sheep. He comes to Shechem and he can't find them. He's going through the field and a man comes over to him and says, "What is it?" And you know what he says? "Et achai anochi mevakesh. I seek my brothers." Do you know what this Yosef wants more than anything else in the world? Not that he should say, as he does over here when he reveals himself, "Ani Yosef." He wants more than anything else that they should say, "Ato Yosef. We recognize you. You're Yosef. Ato Yosef." That's what he wants all along. He doesn't understand. How does he recognize them and they don't recognize him? It's so difficult. I may have asked too good of a question. Because then there's the flip side of this question. Why don't they recognize him? And here you have to be very careful. Because over here, no, I can see what's going on over there. Everybody is going to become an amateur psychologist. I know already, everybody, I'll tell you all the psychology is going to tell them. They despised him and they pushed it, drummed him out of their minds. As far as they're concerned, this Yosef is dead, deader than a doornail. And they succeeded so well that he can hit them on the head and they still don't know that this is Yosef. I don't buy it. I've been walking around the house thinking, why? Et achai anochi mevakesh. Do you know why Yosef wants this? Yosef wants some indication that there's some hope that we can rebuild this family all over again. If they don't recognize me, if I'm not a brother, what hope is there? It's all over. It's all gone. If just somebody would have said, "Hey, that's Yosef." It would have been the greatest thing that Yosef ever heard in his life. Let me ask you something else. When Yosef is listening to this magnificent speech by Yehuda, let's try and imagine, and I'm not asking you, because you'll all tell me, what's he thinking as he hears this dramatic speech? You know what he's thinking to himself? "Oh, come on, Yehuda. Get off it. You think you're going to impress me with this beautifully constructed, powerful piece of oratory? It doesn't mean a thing. It means something to everybody else in the whole world. There's only one person that is left cold, totally unimpressed. Don't tell me about the Alte Tata. You know, don't give me stories about the Alte Tata. You weren't so worried about me when you sold me off into slavery. You weren't so concerned about the Alte Tata. Don't give me this kind of stuff. You want to hand out the Kleenex over here to all these Egyptians who are listening to the whole story, and they'll cry their miserable eyes out. They don't know the truth. I know the truth. I'm the only one." There's not a word that Yehuda says that impresses him. There's not a word that has any impact on him. It shouldn't have impact on him. "What do you mean these? What are you talking about? These crocodile tears? What do you want from me?" You know why Yosef is crying? Because he failed. Yosef wanted to hear the words, "Brother," and he doesn't hear it. That's what he's crying about. "I'm Yosef. I'm Yosef. You don't get it? You don't get it? I seek you at my table according to your birthdays, and you don't get it. I asked you about your old father, not once, twice, three times. How thick can you be? Why don't you get it? Do you know what would have meant to me more than anything else in the world? If you would have been able to say to me, 'Yosef, brother, holy brother,' you would have said that. at Achaya Anochim Mevakesh when he left on that great journey. And he knew that it was going to be a journey that will be fraught with danger. When he leaves from Hebron to go to Shechem, he's ready to endanger himself. I'm ready to say he's ready to endanger himself, not only for the father. He's ready to place himself in grave danger in the hope that maybe he will begin to repair the harm that he has done to the relationship. But it's not to be. It's not to be. I'm getting a little unnerved by all of this. With all my walking around the house, trying to figure out why indeed didn't the brothers recognize him, I've only been able to come up with one thing. Maybe a few years down the line, the Rabbeinu will send after I start get everything off, we'll give you an opportunity to say what's on your mind. Because it's Mishnah, he's gemitched from this year. I think that somehow or other there was a divine intervention over here. That they should not recognize him. You know why? For the rest of their lives, they're going to walk around saying, why didn't we get it? Hey, Yehuda, you remember when he sat us around the table? Why didn't we get it? What happened to us? Why didn't we see all the signs? And at every step of the game, you know, I think there was... When they came on the first time on their way back, they come to the place where they're staying overnight. One of the brothers opens up his sack and he finds his mother money there. And they're terrified. You know what they didn't do? The other nine didn't open up their sacks. When they finally get home, and they're taking all of the food out of the sacks, all of a sudden, the other nine find that their money has also been returned. Why didn't they look? When the first one found his money there, why didn't the rest of them look? I have a feeling for some reason or other they were afraid to face up to the truth. Do you know what the best thing for them will be? Until their dying day. They're going to think to themselves, they're going to kick themselves. Should have got it. Each one of them, Yisachar, Zvulun, Don, Naphtali, Gala, why didn't I get it? Did we sink so low in our having drummed our brother out of the family that we couldn't even see the reality that was staring us in the face? What a tragedy hatred between brothers can create. That you don't see straight anymore. You can't see all of the signs that are there banging you over the head time and time again. Maybe there was divine intervention. That's all I can come up with. I couldn't come up with anything better. But there's no question about it. If Yosef could have held out, or would he have held out? He would have held out. You know what I'm afraid of? If I say that this divine intervention voltus euchet nicht geholfen, because you know what the Rabbeinu Shem really wanted? That Yosef should say, Ani Yosef. They should not be able to say, Ato Yosef. Let them know the extent to which their dealing with their brother had uprooted every bit of brotherhood and brotherliness from them. It's going to be something that they will have to spend a whole lifetime correcting it. And at the very end of Sefer Bereishis, after the father dies and they come back to Mitzrayim, they're still concerned, Lu Yistameinu Yosef. They're afraid that Yosef is now going to cause them harm, and they come pleading before him. This is years later. They come pleading before him and they say, we're servants unto you. The end of Sefer Bereishis must be devastating to Yosef. I thought we got over it all. I thought we had begun to rebuild the relationship. And you know what? I have a feeling. I had always thought that by the end of Sefer Bereshis, the whole family is reconciled to one another. I'm not so sure anymore. I think it may be the servitude in Egypt, where they're all going to suffer one fate. That's what's going to bring them together. We're a funny, funny people. In adversity, we can usually stand shoulder to shoulder. Not in adversity, not good. I think that the Mitzrayim is going to be the experience that's going to make all of the difference. All right? I said my piece. I will give you an opportunity. Go ahead. And if you can't hear, and if I can hear, I'll tell you what's being said. Yes. He was first.
Joseph, I think, had two minds about it. He was wearing a costume. He had his eyeliner on, his face was painted like an Egyptian. He was wearing an Egyptian garb. He had all the accoutrements of his, two beautiful things now. I think it was one mind. He wanted to blind his brother. He wanted his brother to work.
So how can the Pasuk say, Vayakir Yosef es Echov, Yosef recognized his brothers, Vehem lo hikiruhu, they didn't recognize him. If he has taken steps that they shouldn't recognize him, how does the Pasuk say that? I'm terribly sorry, you had your... No, we'll leave you now, you have to start all over again, we'll go to the next one, go ahead. Yes. All right, there's a degree of an element of truth in what you're saying, and some of the Mefarshim indeed say that Yosef was holding out because he still had a dream in which his father also bows down to him, and he wanted that dream to be fulfilled, so he now has to wait until his father is going to come. I know that, but No, they have done tshuva already. At this point, at the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, they've done tshuva. I just find it difficult to believe that Yosef is going to keep up this charade, because all of the indications are that he doesn't want to keep up a charade. He is, in fact, sending all of the signs that he's part of the family. He's sending all the signs. What are you going to do with them? Yes.
I think Rashi says that he also was testing them because he wanted to see if with Binyamin, who was the son of Rachel, if they would act the same way as they did towards him or not. Or if they had done tshuva for that, because it was
Which is now he knows that they're ready. They're ready to do whatever they can on behalf of Binyamin. So that would explain, according to the Pshat, that according to Rashi, who says that according to Rashi, it seems he does want to reveal himself, except he doesn't want to do it in the presence of all of these goyim over there. They don't have to hear all of this. The dirty laundry doesn't have to be in their presence. According to that, that's just, so. Then they did tshuva. But I'm taking the... all right, there's Rashi. I don't want to put myself... I'm not going... All right, wait, I'm trying... yes, I'll get to you in a moment. Yes? I'm taking the high road. Is that a compliment or not? Oh, good. Thanks. Thank you. Nazbir lechachachach, the high road, yes. I like that. That's okay. But it doesn't negate anything that I said. Because you're taking the low road and I'm taking the high road. That's good. Okay. Wait, we have over there. What? Therefore, Yosef, say that, why doesn't Yosef reveal himself? Because? He knew that this was the purpose of going down to Egypt. You need proof for something like that. I can hear it, but you need proof. God, you. I'm trying to. Yes. Yosef is what? Yes. Oh, good. Now that you've complimented me, I'm ready to listen to anything you have to say. That's what we have to. That's our problem. Our problem is it's cruel already. It has passed. All right. She votes for the father had to come. Okay. He wanted his father. Go ahead, David. He says he wants to suggest, David Wolf from Toronto, wants to suggest a Hasidic interpretation that would prove what Rabbi Gold is saying.
Yosef is crying because
this is, you're the Rebbe. No, you just made it up. I can tell that you made it up. In other words, he cries because unfortunately they're going to hear, the story is going to get out. Very nice, very nice. We'll give you Shchaim tomorrow night, if you make it, yes. Wait, just for a moment. Yes? So no, what do I have to? I have to wait until I see it. Okay. Wait. We have 2 more minutes.
Why they were so upset was because they thought this was punishment for what they did. But when he got out to Benjamin, he wasn't included. Then you discern.
They certainly thought it was punishment. They certainly thought it was punishment. Yes. All right, the tzidkus of Yosef had simply changed him. By the way, there's another thing, of course, that could be said, but it's not enough reason. The other is, The last thing in the world that they could ever have imagined was that that 17-year-old kid who caused them so much tzaras is going to become the great leader of Egypt. They couldn't. I know that. But even with all of that, I at once said...
They might have recognized him, they might have talked about it, but they were scared out of his wits in case they make a mistake
with his
one or whatever.
I'll tell you, the only reason why I don't accept that, she says they were frightened of him. You know what happens when we get together? Where do you come from? Yeah, I have mishpuch over there. You know how Jewish geography works. Two people get together, you start talking. Yeah. I don't know, if this would have been a nice schmooze over there, they'd have said, we told you about our father and our brother. What about you? Do you have any family? They would have been afraid of that. All right. That's it.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yes. What tradition are you talking about? Yes.
And then in this case, perhaps Joseph has knowledge of this, learned with his father, talked to his father, he has knowledge. The brother, where is their knowledge? If it's in their existence, one of the 12 tribes has themselves
as being the other. That kind of talk in the shuffle. We're going to put it into the shuffle. I tell you, really, what I've done is I've done Pshuto Shel Mikra. I'm just looking at what story. Yeah. A few years ago, yes. It was better this time. That was only for you, Treisman. No, but I had there were aspects that I didn't aspects that I definitely didn't say before that I just thought about in the last few days. Yes.
My grandson, my nephew, my great.
And now you can tell them stuff on Vayigash that they never heard. Yes. Yeah, but he always, the idea of him saying those two words, Ani Yosef, would have stopped anything at any minute. They would have started doing something. All he would have said is, "Hey, Yehuda, baby, I'm Yosef." That would have ended everything. Yes, sir. Which way you look at? Now I'm looking purely Pshuto Shel Mikra. Pshuto Shel Mikra. Now hold on, I am very impressed with myself. In those days, it must have taken a few days. Listen, if it took from Chevron to Har HaMoriah, it took Avram 3 days, I'd say it takes another 3 days. That's...